You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is transforming troubled boys into responsible young men. Joining us today are Garth Lassiter and Mike Randall. Garth is the clinical director of Ash Creek Ranch. He received his bachelor's degree in social work from Brigham Young University and his master's degree from the University of Nevada at Las Vegas. Garth specializes in working with adolescents and their families in addressing chemical dependency and oppositional defiant attitudes and behaviors. He has a wide range of clinical experience in maintaining sustained recovery. Garth is also the recipient of the special recognition Eli Lilly Welcome Back Award for his primary care with those who are engaged in the struggle with clinical depression. Now, Mike Randall is the horsemanship program director. He began his career as a professional horseman in 1986 when he went to work as a cowboy for one of the largest ranches in the United States with over 40,000 head of cattle. Wow. Since 2005, Mike has worked with several residential treatment centers as their equine facilitator. Over the years, he has developed an extensive curriculum utilizing horses in recovery. Mike is also a certified horseman and is frequently a presenter at conferences. He leads the Ash Creek Ranch Equine Team and Horsemanship Program. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
It's great to be here, Alan. Thank you.
Well,
thank
it is
you.
It is good to have both of you here. I've been out to programs that deal with equine therapy with the young people, and I've always been amazed at the results that you can get. Now, before we get started, I'd like to share for those that are out there, if you're sitting at your computer, I want to give you the Ash Creek website. So go to www.ashcreekranchacademy.com. When you go there, one of the first things you're going to see is this beautiful setting. I mean, it is breathtaking, the setting in which this ranch is, is set. We'll be talking about some of the things that they do at the academy, and so feel free, again, to follow along with us, to look at some of the things that we're talking about by going to the website. So, I guess, Garth, first, I think to start with, tell us a little bit about what the treatment facility, what your particular philosophy is at ARA.
Sure. We're licensed as a residential treatment center in the state of Utah. And our emphasis, our focus is on a young man, age 14 to 18, that is struggling within their home environment. And they're having issues with substance-related disorders, but also co-occurring issues that come typically with the adolescent struggling nowadays with ADHD or depression, anger management, poor decision-making that comes with that. We're also able to work successfully with pornography issues and other high-risk behaviors as well with the typical young man that comes to our program. You know, what I like about Ash Creek Ranch Academy, because there's a lot of programs out there, but what is, in my eyes, very unique that makes us stand out a little bit differently is our horsemanship program. Because I've been involved with other programs in the past that involved horses or equine therapy and such, where it was really, I would say, more of a, lack of a better description, a petting zoo almost. You know, you go in and you touch the horse and you brush the horse, but you don't really learn to begin to develop relationships or learn relationship skills, because addiction is very much about attachment issues, the inability of these young people to have healthy relationships for a variety of reasons. And so the horsemanship component here and everything else that we do that's integrated in has to do with developing, learning how to maintain and sustain a healthy relationship. Well, and it's able to really work effectively with a young man that is struggling in all those areas.
Now, Mike, share with our listeners a little bit about why equine therapy works. And again, as I said, I've been out there, I've seen it work, but explain a little bit about the situation, you know, as far as, you know, why, because a horse is traditionally a prey animal, the things that they're able to recognize in us that maybe sometimes we don't even know.
Well, first of all, equine therapy works mostly because a horse is always in the moment. A horse is worried about what's going around him right now. He doesn't get lost in the past. He's not thinking about the future. He just needs to keep himself safe. And he has a natural way to do that by picking up on humans' behaviors, their thoughts, et cetera. And so he knows whether, you know, everybody's heard that, oh, that horse is scared of me, or I'm scared of that horse. He knows I'm scared of him. They have a way to keep their self safe. So equine therapy is effective because you can bring a kid out to the horses and he might tell the therapist or his parents, oh, I'm okay, but the horse won't have nothing to do with him. So you say to the kid, hey, what's going on with you today? Nothing. Well, the horses tell me something different. And then they break down and they want to start talking or sharing.
Mm-hmm. Now, give us... you know, and maybe Garth, this would be best, but give us, I mean, kind of your typical student. I mean, for some of the professionals that are out there that are thinking about, wow, you know, I'm working with this family, you know, what would be some of the things that would come up to where, you know, they'd go, wow, this is just the perfect fit?
Well, again, we deal with young men ages 14 to, a young man needs to enter in our program by 17 and a half, and that's because state of Utah regulations. You can't take a young man that's over 18. And the typical student that and the way they present is, again, dealing with substance abuse related disorders. You know, they're experiencing with cannabis, alcohol, some of the synthetic drugs that are out there, some meth, you know, all types of different substances. And then we're also dealing with a young man that's also struggling in school. They're not attending on a regular basis, is starting to turn into a wrestling match, figuratively speaking, or literally sometimes, to get the son to get out the door to go to school and to stay in school. They're starting to change their peer culture to one that is quite negative and acting out oriented. And they've tried intensive outpatient programs, IOPs. They may have even tried a wilderness program in the past and brought them back home, and temporarily the young man was, you know, committed to making new choices and doing what they needed to do, but then finding themselves starting to backslide back into old patterns and negative behaviors again. And, you know, the lying, the stealing, you know, just it's a beautiful day today, isn't it, son? The sky's blue. No, it's horrible. It's the worst day of my life. You know, just everything, the oppositional dynamic that's coming in.
Right.
You know, they could even be getting, you know, with their depression, starting to isolate, starting to hide out in the room, starting to stay up on the computer through the night. Like I mentioned, pornography is such a or seen such an increase in activity with the young people nowadays with that. And so those are some of the behavioral issues. Some of the treatment tasks that we see with students are, like I mentioned, intensive outpatient, individual family counseling just isn't working. They're refusing to go or just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Wilderness treatment, it may have tried that and brought them home, or subsequently they're in wilderness treatment and they're looking for something to continue the their treatment on. And so we get a lot of young men that come directly to us from wilderness treatment experiences. And invariably, a lot of the families that we work with are working with educational consultants. And so they're helping to steer the family through this minefield as well of their adolescent struggles to get them to a place that will give them the best help they can get.
Now, you mentioned in regards to, in the beginning, about substance abuse. Does it matter if the substance abuse is a primary or a secondary issue? Do you still feel that you're a good fit for that?
We are. And let me go back to that. That's a good question. Just because, you know, if a young man, let's say, is into heroin and some of those, you know, Oxycontin and things to that effect, you know, we've got to be very mindful of their needs, medically speaking, before they come into a program such as ours. Just because our program can manage and work with a young man that presents on that spectrum of, you know, being chemically dependent to one that's just abusing on a primary or secondary, as you so aptly described it, we are able to work with a young man that presents on either end. But we got to also make sure that they are in a good position physiologically when they come in, because we're not a hospital setting. And make sure that they're able to manage their day-to-day life experience here at Ash Creek.
Now,
yes, a long answer to your questions. Yes, we can.
Okay. Now, we have an instant message coming across, and this one reads, you know, I do have one patient who may be in need of a few months in a structured environment and away from his family. Do you offer a three-month program? If not, what is the shortest period you recommend? So it says that they have a patient. I assume this is – we send out to a lot of therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, so not just ed consultants and special ed coordinators.
Well, our approach tries to work with, you know, the adolescent individually and client-centered, you know, and stay away from the one-size-fits-all, you know, where, you know, it's a year program, and so it's got to be a year. Yet at the same time, we've got to take into account, let's say that this young man came to Ash Creek Ranch. They've got to go through a process of working through their, you know, what we call the pre-contemplation stage, you know, where they're still in resistance, they're still in denial. And our program, we work more effectively in the 8 to 10 month realm, but we do take into account what is the individual needs of the young man. And, you know, each young man is going to present differently. It just all depends on having a good intake and evaluation process to make sure that we got a clear-cut diagnosis, and really working effectively with whoever the previous provider is, too, to get the best we can for the young man. Mike, do you have a thought on that?
I just think it's really up to the individual, taking a look at him before he comes in, and then when he gets here, whether he's willing to go to work or he's resistant.
Uh-huh.
I'll take time.
Well, what is the general length of stay? I mean, is there sort of a number that's kind of the norm, or is there a range of what most of the students come there for as far as length of time?
Our program is built for an 8 to 10 month experience, but again, that can vary. You know, a young man can finish in that time frame, or he may have some challenges, you know, in between, where everyone, because the parents are involved in the treatment team process, where everybody is in agreement, you know, what this young man possibly would need some more time, but that's what we're built around.
Okay. Now, Mike, let me ask some questions in regards to some of the horsemanship and equine therapy. Now, again, as I said, I've been out a few times. One of the things that that I recognized was an improved self-confidence. You know, I really felt with some of the kids that I watched work with the horses, and in some cases I had gone out once and then I'd gone out again, you know, a month later, and I noticed an improved self-confidence. Talk a little bit about that and why you believe that that is so beneficial for them.
Well, I think the biggest thing that builds self-confidence is being able to accomplish a task in a And a lot of times, you know, we're working with students who have went to using drugs or other things because they haven't been successful in other areas of their life. Say they're not the starting linebacker, et cetera. So when you work with a colt or a horse and you're training him a certain training him with a certain skill, say for an example, you're putting the first ride on this colt, or you're putting a halter on him for the very first time, or you're teaching him how to pick his feet up. The student actually teaches the skill set. We don't teach the we show the student, they teach the horse. So the feedback they get from the horse is what builds the confidence. They realize that they just accomplished that task, and they take a lot of pride in that. We actually had a colt challenge here about 2 weeks ago, where every student had 10 days to take a colt, 6 months old. They were just weaned from their mother. They had to teach them to lead, to teach them to pick their feet up, trim their feet, walk in and out of the trailer, a whole set of skills. And some of these horses had never seen a human until the day we unloaded them. We gathered them up off of the Arizona Strip and unloaded them and said, here's your project horse. You have 10 days to teach this skill set. Every kid we had, 20 kids taught their horses how to do everything on the paper and then some. We even had students who were taking those horses and they taught them how to lay down, and they were covering them up in tarps and saddle them, all sorts of things. And that's what builds confidence. When you can accomplish your own tasks and nobody else is doing the work for you.
Uh-huh. Now share with our listeners how some of the kids who have been in situations to where they felt like they couldn't trust some of the people around them, how they improve their level of trust in other people by working with the horses.
Well, I think that starts with when you work with a horse, you're getting feedback from the horse through his behavior, through his actions. Lots of clients, a wide variety, young and old, they like working with the horses because the horse isn't going to talk back to them. He's not going to give them any verbal feedback, like, you know, you act like this because of blank, or this goes back to this, or this is this behavior. Because the horse is in the moment, he's gonna give him feedback. If that kid's scary or acts out or does something to break the trust, that's how the horse is going to respond. Horses have two coping skills. They're going to run or fight. And it's up to the student. What do you want to get out of him? You can push him into a corner, and you'll find out that he fights a little rougher than the people in your peer group. Or you can do things that are consistent to build the trust, and he's going to show you by his actions. He's going to stand next to you. He's going to nuzzle you with his head, etc. Or you can do mean things, and he'll do mean things back.
Mm-hmm. So, now share a little bit more just in regards to, the type of boy that really thrives in this. I know that Garth mentioned, you know, sometimes some of the kids that are dealing with more of an isolation type of thing, where they've started to isolate themselves. How does this kind of help bring them out of their shell?
Well, I think it brings them out of their shell because they have to ask for help. I think the first thing that we're dealing with is a student who knows, you know, he's really entitled and he knows everything, and you're not going to tell him anything about himself or his addiction or his family issues or anything else. But when he's working with this horse, it's so foreign. You know, so many kids, they've never seen a horse nowadays unless he's on TV or they see him at the fair or something like that. So when he does work with his animal, he has to ask for help. And that's the beginning of he's learning to work with me or other staff. He's building trust in them. What we're showing him works or won't work. That's another thing is when you're working with the horse, just because your approach isn't guaranteed to work with each animal because they're different, just like humans. We approach different humans different ways for the results we need. And so they have to think outside of the box. And, hey, if this doesn't work, you have any other suggestions? And they have to keep fiddling around with it and working it until they find out what works.
That sounds great. Now, Garth, one of the things that you know that Ash Creek is known for is you have sort of a patented seven challenge model that you use. Share with us a little bit about that model and why this is so important to your program.
Yeah. When I first came to Ashford, we've been here about a year and a half now, and the primary lead staff, from Mike to Tammy to Darren to myself, all have been involved in residential care for 15 plus years. And, you know, when dealing with substance abuse related disorders, it was truly, really a one size fits all approach utilizing the 12-step model, and which is specifically geared towards adults primarily. It wasn't until the fourth edition of the Big Book that they actually had stories in there that were adolescent directed. And again, the 12-step model was an effective tool, but it seemed to cut out of the picture, or what's the best word to describe it? It kind of left out the opportunity to really connect with young people that were not, you know, clearly chemically dependent. And so Tammy, our executive director, Tammy Behrman, she introduced me to an article that was written by a gentleman named, I forgot the name of him now, but he wrote an article in Addiction Tools for Clinical Excellence, the Addiction Professional magazine. His name was Francis Bartholomew. And he wrote an article on a blended strategy for adolescent males, and I read it, and that's where I was first introduced to the possibility that, wait a minute, you can actually work with hard-to-reach adolescents that are in resistance. I don't have a drug problem. It's just everyone's telling me I have this issue in more of an adaptable approach, just not a one-size-fits-all. And that was the Seven Challenges program, which was individualized with careful attention to meeting each of the youth where they're at and providing some successful counseling interventions. And you're also able to deal effectively with co-occurring issues because many of these young people are having a hard time with just life skill management, coping skills, and also it's quite effective at dealing with trauma. And more today we're dealing with that with young men in trauma in a variety of forms, whether it's parents having marital difficulties or divorce or other forms of abuse that's going on out there with them. But it's a model that was created by Dr. Robert Schweigel out of Tucson, Arizona, back in the mid-90s, who just felt like there was needed to be an approach at dealing with young people and getting them to, because the goal was to make them to quit. But instead of getting into twisting their arms to make them quit or trying to convince them in other ways, you know, just say no or what have you, what I found as well was that young people begin to either lie to us or dig in their feet and resist us. Even if we could temporarily force them to quit using, as soon as they were out of our sight, out of treatment, they would do whatever they wanted to do. And we know that the best way to get good outcomes on the long term is to help young people pause, think, and make their own wise decisions to change. And that's the whole premise of the seven challenges, is to get these young people to begin to stop, to pause, to think, and to begin making some wise choices, make their own wise decisions to change. And as we work toward this end with them in the seven challenges, we will make sure that young people hear our concerns about the dangers of drugs and also our support for them in making wise decisions to not to use harmful drugs.
Right. Well, it sounds like, and what you're saying is that the idea is to make them realize to a point in which they don't want to. The best way to elicit change in anyone is to shift the thought process to a point of, I really don't want to do this, and I recognize, you know, the values of not doing this.
Correct. Because a lot of times the adolescents enter into any program already knowing what they're there to do. I mean, they're there to stop using and stop acting out. They've already heard about the dangers of drugs. So, you know, their parents or whomever has been already talking to them. And so they walk into our program like they would any program, ready to engage in the therapeutic process. You're going to try and get me to do something that I'm not wanting to do. And what the Seven Challenges is about is a different approach at getting to the underlying reasons that are legitimate to these young people of why they want to use and why they find something positive from using. I mean, that's a foreign discussion for the most part for a lot of clinicians, but also for family members, which says, what do you mean? We want them just to see that the negatives. Well, frankly, these young people are using because they are finding something positive, whether it's they're starting to be able to connect with some form of peer group, they're able to manage their anxiety or their depression differently or their attention issues. They're starting to be able to manage maybe some of the trauma that's going on in their life around them. And they're seeing in a short-sighted way how it's helping them. They're not seeing the long-term. And invariably we get to that point of pointing out, you know, and they will eventually get to the point of pointing out, well, these are some of the negatives. But we really try to instill in them from the get-go, which is challenge number one, which is to get them to be honest. You know, just start talking honestly about yourself and about your alcohol and drug use.
Exactly.
And get that, create that openness with them. And then, and even then going into the second challenge, you know, which is, well, what did you like about it? And usually we never get there. I mean, we kind of focus in on, we admitted we were powerless over whatever our drug of choice is and our life had become unmanageable. And they're not, a lot of young people aren't ready to go there yet, or they're not even at that level of usage yet.
Okay, so let me go over that. So the first challenge is be honest with yourself, right?
Be honest with ourselves.
Right, and then the second challenge, you're challenging them to really sit down and analyze and look at what did they like about that drug or that particular thing. Now, what I'm going to do now is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll discuss the five other challenges. So I want everybody to, again, stay with us. And again, I gave you the website if you want to take a look. It is www.ashcreekranchacademy.com. When we come back, we'll talk more about the remaining challenges. Now, during this break, there's a message that I want to get out to everybody. We are now in what I consider the holiday season, the season of gratitude and the season of Thanksgiving. I have a very, very dear friend who is going through some very difficult things right now. So please listen to her daughter speak and share this with everybody you can. Thank you.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com. And search One Family's Battle, onefamily_sbattle. And you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thanks.
All right, we're back. And we are talking about transforming troubled boys into responsible young men. We're speaking with Garth Lassiter and Mike Randall of Ash Creek Ranch Academy. And when we went to break, we were talking about the seven challenges, and this is a model that they use. We went through the first two, the first of which is honesty. The second one is getting them to openly talk about what it is they liked about that activity or doing that drug. So from this point, Garth, what's the next challenge?
The next challenge is where they're looking at their use of alcohol and other drugs and seeing how it's caused harm in their life or could cause harm. And that's the key element there, because sometimes these young people, you know, the parents have intervened before life has really gotten too problematic, per se. And so sometimes they're saying, well, it really wasn't causing that much of a problem. So we can go into, well, what do you think could happen if you continue to use?
Good point.
And what I like to, if I could really fast, is put into the context that how we're working the seven challenges with the young man is through a process of journaling. And each challenge has a journal assigned to it. Challenge one has two journals, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, one journal apiece, and then challenge seven has two journals. And so let's go back to challenge number three. We looked at our use of alcohol and other drugs to see if it had caused harm or could cause harm. And so they're going to be answering a series of questions in a journal that asks them a variety of questions, like, you know, how was it causing harm for you in academics or in your family life or in your social life? And so they'll write their answers in it, and then they'll turn that journal into their therapist. And the therapist will then go through and read their answers, and maybe there's something that was very profound, and we'll write off in the margin, you know, what great job, Johnny, that, you know, really saw that took some courage to put that out on paper. Way to go. Or there may be an answer to a question that begs for a little bit more in-depth answers, so we'll ask another question. What did you mean when you said that this helps you to escape what was going on in the home? And so it creates this interactive, safe, whole different experience of beginning to disclose and to become honest through journaling back and forth with their therapist, rather than let's go in my office and sit down and let's talk about your life. It's just another avenue of being able to do that.
Now, Garth, would I be correct in saying that these are also journals that they're going to keep? Is that correct?
These are personal journals that are there. It's very confidential to them and to myself as their therapist. It's
right.
Something that is not shared in group therapy. It's not shared with their parents. If they choose to share it with their parents, that's their choice.
Right.
Yes. But it just creates a safe avenue.
Exactly. Well, and not only that, but what I see too is that because of the fact that we're dealing with teenagers, that these are things that they're going to take back with them. One of the beauties of the good programs that I'm fortunate to be around and to meet people that you know, that work within is, you know, that they recognize the fact that we're setting young people up to succeed in the future, not to become dependent, but to succeed. So by having these with them, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a situation in which, you know, if they start to backslide or they have questions, and, you know, they could be 25 years old now. Do you look at it and say, for them to be able to go back and read this and go, yeah, that's why I quit using. That's why I did this. So I think that's an important thing for people to understand is that this is something that they take with them for life.
Correct. And it you know, because what we're really promoting is self-efficacy by encouraging each of these teens to think for themselves and to make their own informed decisions. And that allows them to look back at some of the decision-making processes that they've utilized in the past through that journaling and are talking to them, also in individual counseling as well. And even out at Horses, we're about teaching them social, psychological, emotional life skills that can enable these young men to learn new adaptive ways to cope with the variety of stressors out there and to meet their needs in a healthier way, and give them that confidence. So after challenge three, then they move into challenge four, which is they look at their responsibility and the responsibility of others for their problems. So again, we're just not labeling it alcohol or drug use problems. And then we go into the fifth challenge. We thought about where we seemed to be headed, where we wanted to go, and what we wanted to accomplish. And then challenge six is where we really begin to look at where they're at in their change process. Because challenge six is we made thoughtful decisions about our lives and about our use of alcohol and other drugs. So this is where they're starting to put into writing, and also in their discussion with us, that, you know what, I really see that this was not working well for me. And I know I need to make these different choices in my life, socially, or how I'm handling things at home, or that, maybe begin to write it down, and it begins something that we can begin holding them accountable for, too, because in challenge seven is they follow through on their decisions about their lives and their drug use. If they see problems like you're talking about, Alan, we can go back to the earlier challenges and master them even more. And so that, you know, that's seven challenges in a nutshell, and invite all your listeners to go online. You can go to sevenchallenges.com and read up on it even more. But somewhere in the mix, because what makes, in my opinion, Ash Creek unique in our treatment of substance abuse-related disorders, whether primary or secondary, is our ability to utilize a hybrid approach where some of these young men will need something more than just seven challenges. They are clearly after a real good, complete, thorough diagnostic process that they are very clearly in that realm of addiction. And they're looking for something more. They may even have had some experience in the 12-step meetings before they came, or they are looking at something more spiritually grounded. Then we can introduce to them the 12-step model, because really, if you think about step one, that's really challenge one through three in a way. And then when you get into challenge four, you're actually into step four. The one hiccup with it all is the spirituality component, because the seven challenges does not utilize spirituality, whether higher power or some other power that exists out there for the young people. And so that's where if they are looking for something more than that, we are able to integrate that in through that hybrid approach.
Okay.
And so far, so good.
All right. And Mike, you know, how do you see the horses complementing the seven challenge program?
Well, the seven challenges is all about making good decisions and choices. And when you come back to natural horsemanship is all about making the right things easy for the horse and the wrong things difficult, fixing it up for the horse to be successful and letting him find it. And when a student learns how to do that, you know, an example would be, like I said, in that colt challenge, we brought those colts in off the desert, and they'd never seen a human. Well, I could have roped them, or the student could have roped them and choked them down, scared them to death, made a miserable experience about it, and got the halter on. The next day, the horse would have fought twice as hard. Or they can learn how to be patient and make their decisions, and the horses become the horse's decisions by setting it up for the horse to make a choice. And I think that's really where the biggest compliment in the seven challenge is, look, guys, what is the job we need to do with the horse? Let's make it so his decision becomes what we're thinking. We want him to go this direction, then let's make it easy for him to go that direction. When he finds it, let's give him some positive feedback. And if he doesn't find it, what's the consequence? Well, maybe we can keep him working, or, you know, take the consequence to the level of what we need to take it to get the job done. So
right.
I think it's all about choices and letting them understand that we need to fix it up for this horse to be successful. Let him find it. And the same thing with the student. You know, we're not bringing you through the door going, you're going to leave here in 8 months and you are going to be sober. and if you can't be sober, we'll rope you and choke you down like we would this horse. You know, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for, it's your choice, bud. There's a better way. Let me show you how it works a better way with the horse. And then let them process that on their own.
That sounds great. We've got an email here that's coming across. This one reads, I have heard a great deal about the therapeutic value of horsemanship. Do you have any statistics about the outcomes? We are considering a program for our 14-year-old son, and at present, we have not been presented with a program with this offering by our educational consultant. I have just gone to your site and will be talking to her, and then it says in parentheses, our consultant, this week. Thank you, SG.
Well, statistically, unfortunately, equine therapy is very new. So even like right now, you've got a lot of federal grant money going to PTSD for veterans, but there's no case studies, very limited amount of case studies, because to control the population, et cetera. And within the time frame, obviously, equine therapy just came out really in the 90s. Natural horsemanship got popular in the 90s. And so with the time frame, I mean, for an example, it's not a billable. Experiential therapy is billable, got its own code, medical code. Equine therapy doesn't have its own medical code because of what her question is. Do we have any facts? We don't have any facts, but we do have the federal government. We do have thousands of people who are going through this process, and they know it's working.
Uh-huh.
Nobody has enough case studies to actually get its own medical code, et cetera. I wish they did, but we don't.
Well, Garth, I mean, do you have just some statistics just based on the success of the boys that have left your program?
Well, we don't. You know, again, we've only been here for about a year and a half now. And I know that each of the young men, we were just talking about in a staff meeting this morning, talking about a number of boys that have come to the program. I can't give you any scientific, you know, results and numbers in regards to it, but I know that, you know, like this individual that is looking for a program for their son, is that we're more than willing, when they call, to have them talk to any number of these families that have gone through, where they can share with them their experience of how the program has helped their son.
Okay, well, and speaking of that then, I mean, what we're really talking about is success stories. I mean, you know, that,
correct,
you know, for them to be able to talk to the other parents, or if the, you know, if the children, you know, if they want to talk with the other student and the family is okay with that, I guess. But,
correct,
but what would be, I mean, you know, give us a couple of, you know, of, yeah, success stories. And I think, you know, you know, you guys have both been around, you know, a lot, you know, for quite some time. Just, you know, some success stories of where this system has worked for the family, and the family has, you know, has let you know that.
Well, I've worked with some families. You know, this all started back for me with working with kids with horses. I worked with a kid in 95 and taught him how to gallop racehorses. And he actually went to Bay Meadows from Utah, which is up at, in San Francisco, paid his way through college, graduated magna cum laude, and now he works for the, well, it's classified what he does, but he's a computer programmer for the U.S. government. The FBI came in and interviewed me and everything, and this is kind of how we started with the horsemanship aspect of it. You know, recently, we one thing we haven't really talked about is when they come to the ranch, part of our horsemanship program is we teach farrier science, so we've got kids that can earn a living shoeing horses, and they actually learn how to train and break colts, and they can train horses. So it's, they learn a lot of life skills that they can actually transfer back into a job setting. And if they don't use the horsemanship in the job setting, they can use the good hard work ethic and the other things, the responsibility piece. But we've got,
sure,
a student that left our program. He's in Mainline High School right now. In fact, I read a letter from the principal congratulating him on being on the honor roll. You know, very doing very, very good right now. You know, one really stands out to me.
Uh-huh.
I just got a text message from a mom on Thanksgiving morning telling me, hey, that their son's doing great, he's got a job, blah, 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 really appreciate you. There's tons of stories out there that, you know, each individual has their own story. But I think the biggest thing is they're learning a set of skills that they can transfer home into different job situations, as long as, you know, as far as the being very consistent, establishing a work ethic, being very responsible. These horses bring it out in them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, just to back up, you said that one of the things that you got a message on Thanksgiving. I don't want to let that just pass because I think it's really important. Because I think to explain that a little bit better, what it sounds like to me is that you have a family that on Thanksgiving is, you know, going around the table and saying, you know, who should we give thanks to? And it sounds to me like, you know, Mom felt at that point that she needed to give thanks to you. And I think that speaks volumes.
You're correct. I mean, this was a family from the Chicago area that, I mean, I remember the letter. It was very clear stating, for the first time in a long time, we're together as a family, with both sons, Mom and Dad, around, you know, together at Thanksgiving, more than they could ever have asked for, I believe is quote-unquote, uh-huh. And very grateful. And this was a very complicated young man that came in here, you know, in regards to his substance use, but also those co-occurring issues with depression and anxiety and a variety, a very complicated presentation diagnostically. And, you know, he came in at a time when, you know, he was going on 18 and there was a lot of concern, but a lot of time and effort went into him. And that's where the out at the horses, that was where really he connected. Because they spend about, I'd say, 20 plus hours a week out at the horses. And then they spend, you know, that same amount of time back home, doing their academics back at the house. So they really learn a lot about themselves and relationships and how to maintain a healthy relationship. And, you know, and heck, if you want another story, I watching, this was when I worked with a young lady at another program utilizing the same model other than the seven challenges, who was very clearly chemically dependent, the 12-step model did work successfully with and still is. He's 5 years sober. Her brother I saw playing, plays for San Diego State, was on national ESPN, and so I texted, hey, are you at the game? She was, and she went and got herself into part of the camera. and parents texting back, she's doing great, thank you so much. You know, she's 5 years sober. And we, you know, those are the wonderful stories that both Mike and attach to, and I can attach to, that makes this work worthwhile.
Hey,
when you get these messages,
absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. Is that, you know, for those of us in this industry, those are the stories that keep us going. Those are the things when we know that 5 years later, 10 years later, whatever it is, they are still, you know, they are succeeding in life. They're approaching life with a much greater vision. All of those things, just you know, that's what keeps us going. So I appreciate that. Now, you mentioned something real briefly. You mentioned about the academic side, and we've only got about a minute. But what about the child where they've gotten behind? Is your academic set up in such a way that it works well for them to be able to get caught up?
Yes, yeah, very much so. First of all, we're fully accredited. And by Advanced Ed. And so we're able to work with two types of young people. One, actually three types. One is a young man that is so far behind and their age precludes trying to go back and do credit recovery. So we actually have three young men, I think, here recently that were in that profile that passed their GED. And now we're looking at continuing their academics through some college courses or looking into eventually joining the military, whereas the middle range age group that still, you know, is that junior, sophomore, junior student, maybe going into senior year, they're able to continue on in a traditional setting with accredited teachers to assist them in a core curriculum classes that they need so that when they finish the program, they can step right back into a school back home. Or also a young man that needs to do some credit recovery. It was really because of part of their struggles, their academics really tanked, and it's amazing what they can do. They can go back and recreate, almost like Phoenix. I mean, from ashes into something that's outstanding that they never thought they could have. So, again, we have the traditional type of setting, but we also do some online through Blueprint where they can do some academics that way, but also credit recovery.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both for coming on. The time has flown by, and thank you also for what you're doing for the families out there. So thank you, and again, for more information, you can go to AshCreekRanchAcademy.com. Gentlemen, have a great week.
We will now, and thank you for all the good work that you're doing.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.